Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to First Things First.
Is that a false start? You jumped the gun?
Did I jump the gun? Let me try it again. Oh, hey there, everyone. Welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer, Chris Carter. This right here is Nick Wright. We don't jump guns here on FS1. Big show today. Antonio Brown is stirring up new drama with Big Ben. Wait till you hear. Speaking of drama, Magic Johnson had a whole lot to say about the Lakers mess. But we got to start with the Western Conference Finals because they're over.
My buddy just texted me and said, thinking about guns, holler, holler, Jenna
holler,
Wolf.
Is everybody
nice
happy?
Draft. Another one.
Warriors trying Atlanta. To finish off the Blazers in game four, and they did just that. They trailed by as many as 17 in this one. They came all the way back, and Draymond Green from long did it. Damian Lillard tried from long. He could not. The Warriors are moving on after a sweep of the Western Conference Finals, heading to the NBA Finals for the fifth straight year. Here's Steph Curry after the game.
We don't take anything for granted. Every single night, especially when you get to the playoffs, there's a hunger about us. And whether we win or lose, you know, we take pride in how we play. And, you know, five straight finals and the historic nature of what that is kind of crazy to think about. We want to enjoy it. We know four more wins defines your season, winning a championship. So got to stay locked in.
All right, there's a lot to get to with this team and how they did it and how they did it without certain people. But let's start, Nick, with you. How incredible is this Warriors run now? Five straight NBA Finals appearances.
Say that again, Jenna.
Five in a row, they got to the NBA Finals.
The odds are, if you're watching this show, you've never seen a team do it. You had to be alive in the 50s to the 60s and be watching basketball when basketball was barely on television. Maybe for our oldest viewers, they heard of a team doing this, Russell Celtics. And Russell Celtics did it in the era where they only had to win one series each time to get to the NBA Finals. There's only eight teams in the whole league. They got a bye into the conference finals each year, so they had to win four playoff games to make their 10 straight NBA Finals. They only had to win 11 total series in that 10-year run when they made 10 straight NBA Finals to get there. The Warriors, what they're doing here is totally unprecedented. We're numb to it because we expected it from Golden State and because we kept hearing about, over the last decade, LeBron's eight straight finals as an individual. But that's a different story here. LeBron, as great as he is, I do not believe he would have made eight straight had he stayed in Miami. That team aged out of it. The wear and tear of four straight finals runs was incredibly apparent in that fourth year. And LeBron left to go to Cleveland, start a new streak. That we have seen some of the greatest teams ever. The Celtics of the 80s, when Larry Bird won three straight NBA MVPs. They made it to four straight and then got knocked out in the conference finals, going for their fifth straight. The Lakers, with Magic and Kareem, they made nine NBA finals. Magic did over his lifetime with the Lakers, eight of them with Kareem. But they could never make it to more than four in a row. They got knocked out in five games in the conference finals of the year. They were going for their fifth in a row. What the Warriors are doing has not been done in modern NBA history. And there's so much noise surrounding them. There's Durant, there's Draymond, the future, Steph, who's the best Warrior? And this series, once they got past Houston, see, it felt something like a fait accompli. Like, we knew they were going to beat Portland. That we didn't, yesterday I realized, we didn't even mention on the show. With a win, the Warriors will do something that has not been done in over 50 years and has never been done in the modern NBA. That's what they did last night.
It's really special. And you can go from top to bottom, from the organization. We don't talk about the ownership. We don't talk about their commitment to excellence, which is putting all this talent together. They took a chance with Steph Curry. They had to make a decision on him a number of years ago and decided, yes, we are going to, even though he's got bad ankles, he's undersized, he could be one of the best shooters ever. It wasn't then, we knew. So what they did there, their investment in Steve Kerr. Steve Kerr's battled some health problems. But even last night, it just showed me from top to bottom, they're the best in sports, if not the best that we've ever seen. You talked about the time. Like, I was just barely alive. I can't lie and say I was watching.
No, of course.
Like, this is not something that you're going to see, and it's special from the top to the bottom. And last night, to me, Steve Kerr just proved to me what a good coach he is, because you can't play basketball like that with the number of reserves that they're playing with and have the type of flow, continuity, everyone knowing what they're supposed to do, unless you are coaching those guys that we have been saying all year, oh, man, they don't have a bench. Well, their bench is not good as it used to be, because they used to have people like David West, Iguodala coming off the bench, Sean Livingston was younger
than DeAndre Barbosa in the
beginning. They had a number of guys, but to me, it came all together last night. This five-year run they've been on is very, very special. I think Steve Kerr is really underrated, and you can see that how he empowers guys to be able to play their role. There wasn't one guy that came off that bench, and they played 11 guys early, that was confused with what they were supposed to do, and they had the skill, the basketball IQ, and the talent to be able to do that. This has been very, very impressive. The most impressive thing that I've seen since the Michael Jordan era, when Michael won, took a break, and then came back and won again.
It's incredibly impressive if you take the macro look. If you take the micro look, it's even more impressive. They trailed by double digits in how many games in this series?
They
three
trailed
of
by
four?
17 points in games 2, 3, and 4. Last night, late in the third quarter, they trailed by 17.
17 points. They did it with no Boogie in this series. They did it with no Iggy last night. Mm-hmm. And they won 4 straight games in the Western Conference Finals with no Kevin Durant.
And I think that's a really important point, because there, when we were talking about the Warriors this season, were they going to be able to do something going into the season we knew hadn't been done in 50-plus years? What were the possible reasons they wouldn't do it? Well, sometimes teams just get sick of each other. It's what happened to Shaq and Kobe. Got sick of each other. 2 weeks into the season, Draymond and KD are barking at each other on the bench. We saw that potential separation. Would they have enough depth? There were real questions about their bench all year. Boogie goes down in round one. KD goes down in round two, in a round two series against a team that had built their entire identity around trying to beat the Warriors. There were so many exit ramps for them to not to get to this point. Now, there weren't many in the Western Conference Finals, so it felt like if the series had been reversed, if they played Portland last round and Houston this round, I think it maybe would be more celebrated. People would understand the significance of it more, because there would have been more suspense over whether
they failed in all those
games. Yeah, but they also would have gotten through Houston without Kevin Durant the whole series.
Sure, absolutely. And doing it without Kevin Durant, sweeping the Blazers, coming back on a desperate Blazers team. Again, they were down 15 at the half of game 2, down 13 at the half of game 3, and down 17 with a minute 45 left in the third quarter of game 4, and they won all 3 of those games. The Blazers led for more minutes in this series than the Warriors did, and they could not win a single game.
Yeah, it was impressive. It was very impressive, and they have what very few teams have. And I'm talking about the greatest teams in basketball. And that's the ability to be able to come back from any deficit. And to me, that's a skill. People might say, well, maybe it shows their lack of attention to detail and stuff early. Well, I don't know what it shows early. But I know at the end of the game, where the score is more important than it is at halftime, then the Warriors have that ability that regardless of what happened, they can lock in for a quarter, for a half, and hit you with all different types of offense. But the one thing that won't be talked about in this 5 years, they have always been an elite defense. And without Kevin Durant, surprising as is, their offense might be a little bit better. Defensively, they are back on to being the Warriors, and that's how they won last night's
and
game.
And see, your point about being able to come back from any deficit at any point, teams like this across sports have a psychological edge that they impose on their opponents. I remember watching some of your Vikings teams, particularly once Moss got there and paired with you. There was an element of, man, these guys can score from anywhere. And you could see how it affected defensive game plans. You could see how it opened up running lanes for Robert Smith, because you could be on your own 20 and they were afraid. The Blazers were up 17. and were not comfortable. The Blazers were up 17, and they were the more anxious team. That's what a five-year track record of beating people over the head buys you, is that teams can't play their best even when they're are playing their best because they're waiting for the other shoe to drop.
All right, there's no word yet on when Kevin Durant will return. The big question of whether this team is better off without him in the lineup or not, that annoying question. Vincent Goodwill will be out here. We'll talk about that coming up and so much more in this game. Big game by Steph, by the way.
Oh, my God.
But coming up, talk some football. Why is Big Ben apologizing to Antonio Brown? That's next on FS1. You can always check us out on the Fox Sports channel on SiriusXM. We will be right back.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Welcome back. We'll get to Big Ben and Antonio Brown in a second. But first, Damian Lillard dropping Alphonso McKinney before knocking down the tray.
Dame played better in this game. It was his best game of the series. It wasn't enough, obviously, and he couldn't help hold off the Warriors after they built that big lead in the third quarter. This game went different, where the Blazers actually were the team that had control that third quarter.
Dame finding Myers Leonard, who finishes over Draymond Green.
Just one of the exciting plays early in game. Myers Leonard, man, he was out of control last night. 25 points in the first half, hitting from three. Finishes on Draymond. Nice give and go there by Dame.
All right, finally, Steph Curry showing off his touch here with a nice finger roll off the glass to get the and one.
Man, I was worried at the end of this Steph could have got hurt. He was watching the shot, and he ended up tripping over a camera guy falling into the crowd. This was, I mean, some skill, some luck, some living right, but you'll see it right there where he kind of falls backwards. Didn't see that one coming.
Sensational game by Steph last night.
It was unbelievable.
He made a bunch of crazy shots.
All right, moving on to the Pittsburgh Steelers, because it's been a minute since we highlighted any of their drama. All right, so quick backstory here. Last year, Ben Roethlisberger threw some shade at Antonio Brown after a loss to Denver, saying he ran the wrong route. Well, yesterday, about 6 months later, he decided to apologize, saying, quote, I took some heat, and deservedly so, for some of the comments on that show, and especially towards him. I genuinely feel bad about that, and I'm sorry. Did I go too far after that Denver game? Probably. That's the thing about media and social media. As soon as you say sorry, it only goes so far. You can't take it back. And I wish I could, because if that's what ruined our friendship and relationship, I'm truly, genuinely sorry about that. There were some great things, and then all of a sudden it kind of disappeared, and I'm not really sure where it went. We always worked through it. We always came out the other end smiling, hugged it out. I really am looking forward to reconnecting with him, talking. He's a good friend of mine. I still call him a good friend. I hope we can reconnect, and I hope our friendship can continue to grow. Now, Antonio Brown heard the apology, thought about it, and reacted with far less words than Big Ben used. He just tweeted, two-face. All right, CC, what do you make of Big Ben's efforts to make things right with Antonio Brown?
Yeah, I mean, there is a time to apologize, and nothing like an apology in America. Like, we accept one that we think is genuine. That's what we're looking for. People are like, oh, man, you can apologize. Not anytime, not any kind of way. You're like, apologize in real time, like when it happened. You had a chance not only, because it's not the night after the game, on the plane, coming back. Typically, it's the next day you've looked at the film, and also you've kind of seen what's out there in the media. And veterans are like, typically someone from the organization to come to you and be like, I think that you need to make a statement or say something. That was the time. He had said the same thing that he said yesterday in that time, with a person that he called a friend, I think that we in the football world have been like, man, this is how things happen. It's a volatile office. It happens to be on the sideline. It's not your normal 9-to-5 job. But Ben has allowed all this time. Obviously, he hadn't talked to Antonio about it. And to me, I don't like the fact that if you and I are friends, you should be talking to me. You don't have to tell anyone else about how you feel about me and everything, because you have my number, you've communicated with me before, and we've had other issues that Ben admitted that they've been able to work through. So Ben knows he was wrong in doing this, but that's been part of Ben's inconsistent leadership since he's been in Pittsburgh. So Ben's not the reason Pittsburgh has all the problems, but Ben, a lot of times, didn't help himself or help the organization with the way he conducted himself.
And when you say there's nothing like an apology in America, listen, anyone that's in any type of relationship knows there's two types of apologies. Some people would say genuine and not genuine, but what I would say is an apology that's for me, the aggrieved party, or an apology that's for you, the party that was in the wrong, to make you feel better about you having done wrong. This, to me, very clearly falls in the latter rather than the former. This is, and people can say, picking on Big Ben, it's not, what more do you want him to do? I don't know. Not give a long, heartfelt message on television in Pittsburgh when you know the damage has been done.
6 months prior.
As part of your own new attempted image rehabilitation, because finally, what has been talked about within NFL circles and certainly within that team for a long time is coming out. And more people are noticing, well, the thing he did to Antonio Brown, he kind of did the same thing to Mike Tomlin when he threw the pick right before at the Patriots game and the Jesse James game. And he kind of did it to Todd Haley all the time before Todd Haley got fired, which was a lack of personal accountability and more, hey, look at where those guys screwed up. And so maybe this is very, I can't look into a man's heart, into his eye, and say I know exactly where it's coming from, but this strikes me as an apology for Ben Roethlisberger. Well, now my sins have been wiped away. I'm absolving myself of the responsibility, and if Antonio, he's still a good friend. I hope one day we can reconnect. You know damn well that the way to reconnect with Antonio Brown is not through an interview on KDKA in Pittsburgh when Antonio has moved on from there. And you know, you mentioned, C, sometimes you apologize for things that happen within the game or within the heat of the moment right after the game.
Right.
It is noteworthy that Big Ben, what he did wrong here, that interview, happened 2 days after the game. Happened on a Tuesday morning in Pittsburgh on his radio interview. And Ben's not a dumb man. When he saw the relationship going sideways, when he and Antonio had the blow up, at the very least, when they have the blow up on the practice field, that might have been a light bulb moment. Like, oh, maybe there's some lingering resentment here. Mm-hmm. Maybe I need to go to him then. So usually you get credit for an apology. It's tough for me to look at this one other than a public relations move rather than a sincere thing between two people that once upon a time were close friends.
This image rehabilitation, this whatever you may call it, whatever you want to call it from Big Ben, does any of this affect what we're going to see on the field for the Steelers this coming season? Does any of this affect his leadership skills, what he's going to be able to do to lead this team?
Well, I know a lot of people haven't looked at it, but last year Ben Roethlisberger led the NFL in passing. And what they'll do is, Pittsburgh Steelers, they will put together a good game plan. Like, they will make the adjustments. They're not as talented, Golden State Warriors, not as talented, but they have enough functional, organizational things that they're going to win at least 8 games. If Ben has a great year, they can win 11 games. They will be fighting for their division. They got good coaches. They got good players. So I believe that where Ben is right now, Elbel's out the door, AB, he's gotten heat. He wants a contract extension. Watch Ben get real focused. Watch him probably try to come to training camp, and he's going to say, you know something? In the best shape of my life. His face is going to be a lot slimmer and everything. These are the types of things that happen. A lot of time, you need something to help jumpstart your career or jumpstart your image, which he's trying to. So for me, he's a great, great football player. I look for him to be. Look at the offseason activities. He's got a bunch of guys that he's spending time with in Georgia where they're out on his boat and spending time that he typically does not do or typically don't let people know that he was doing these type of team-building activities. So I look for Ben to come out focused, and I look for him. I look for his numbers to suffer because I don't believe they're a passing team, but not because he wasn't efficient with the football.
Listen, everyone knows Ben Roethlisberger's first ballot Hall of Famer, and that last year was, if the team had won more, he would have been in that second-tier MVP discussion, an award he's never won, and he's never really come that close to winning. So how can this affect positively or negatively the Steelers on the field? Here's what I think the answer to that is. When an incident like this happens next year, when they have either a rough moment or a rough stretch of games, does Big Ben learn from his own words that me taking personal accountability rather than saying Juju shouldn't have been on Instagram the night before the game or the young receiver they drafted last year, James Washington, ran the wrong route, does he, you know, follow his own wisdom now of I'm not going to publicly chastise my teammates? Because while I don't think staying quiet can lead to more winning, I think creating dissension in the locker room via comments can lead to more losing. And so, yeah, here's where I think it can have an effect is Ben Roethlisberger a better teammate in the public eye next year? Are there less distractions, if you will, even though I hate that word, surrounding the Steelers? That could help them in a critical year for Mike Tomlin and the Steelers organization.
Yeah, I don't think the public image matters. I just think it matters what's in that locker room. And the guys know that's our quarterback. The organization told us, the general manager told us, and they happen to be paying them the most amount of money. So a lot of guys in pro football, they're not idiots. They realize we're going to follow that guy regardless. And they're all going to say good things about Ben and about Ben's leadership. That will be a constant theme in Pittsburgh.
All right, let's take a break there. Coming up, back to basketball. Magic Johnson has a whole lot to say about the Lakers' dysfunction. That is next on First Things First. Welcome back. The 2019 FIFA Women's World Cup kicks off June 7th. All eyes will be on Alex Morgan, Carly Lloyd, Megan Rapinoe, and the U.S. Women's National Team as the defending champions head to France looking to win a historic fourth World Cup. All the matches will be live here on Fox and FS1. Cannot wait. All right, time for us to go viral. So yesterday, the Giants posted some video from their OTAs, and their prize rookie quarterback, Daniel Jones, was the center of attention. Saquon and Eli were also in attendance. Matt Mayer posted this picture on Twitter. Eli and Daniel Jones twinning.
I apologize. While you were reading the World Cup promo, I laughed because this picture, giant picture, came up behind us. And this is remarkable, man. Look at these two guys. You right there, see? Do you know which is which?
Yes.
Well, that was more rhetoric, but you're right. It's
okay. Eli's okay. On the right.
Correct. Oh, that wasn't.
But it was a rhetorical question.
Yeah, you're too smart for me.
No problem. I couldn't.
Perhaps this is why they were blindsided in the draft.
I mean, I was disappointed. Now I got to look at all shucks for another 15
years. Yeah, I know. The Eli face is now the Daniel Jones face. Everything about it. This is remarkable.
It's uncanny.
That's crazy, man. Giants fans, you got what you wanted. And now if you just get OC,
we didn't know.
And Justin Tuck to come
with
him.
How to replace Eli, get a lookalike.
Yeah, exactly right.
Good thing they came there for OTAs, so we wouldn't have had that picture. Time now for stories to start your morning. Warriors beat the Blazers in overtime to finish up the sweep in the Western Conference Finals. Steph Curry, Draymond Green both notched triple-doubles as Golden State advances to their fifth straight NBA Finals. See, how impressive is this accomplishment?
It's amazing. So impressive. They were down more than they were ahead. Down 101 minutes, only ahead 83 minutes in this. Kevin Durant being out, Boogie Cousins being out, them retooling their offense around Steph Curry and Klay. Draymond Green playing the best basketball I've seen him play in NBA. Man, there's so many storylines that are awesome about this.
And throughout the morning we've been talking about, we'll continue to talk about the five straight finals. I want to talk about the most important player that's been a part of all five straight of those finals, Steph Curry. Here's another rhetorical question. You know how many people have scored more points in a sweep in NBA playoff history than Steph just did? Nobody ever. He just set the record. He averaged 37 a game. 37, 8, and 7 in the Western Conference Finals. Last night, he played the most minutes he's ever played in a playoff game, all of the second half and overtime. He was spectacular, and as he's always been, he's been the key to everything the Warriors do. He showed it in this series without Durant.
All right, to the Blazers now. Despite being swept, Damian Lillard says, quote, "We put together a great season." Lillard, of course, was slowed down this series with separated ribs. All right, Nick, what's next for this Blazers team?
Well, one way to look at it would be you hope Kevin Durant leaves, and they just beat you without Kevin Durant. Another way to look at it is, well, we got swept out of the playoffs each of the last 2 years, and this year made the Western Conference Finals. Okay, sure. I think they do have to question what is the ceiling with this undersized backcourt and the players they currently have in the front court defensively. I know they were without Nurkic, but even with Nurkic, they were an average defensive team. Well, how good can this team be if they don't make a significant change? Because I think they overachieved to a degree making it to the Western Conference Finals this year.
Yeah, I'm not going to lose sight of what success they did have this year after being swept the last 2 years, reaching the Western Conference Final the first time in 19 years as a franchise, even though they were shorthanded, the leadership of Damian Lillard. But they have to retool. They have to get better defensively, and they have to have more options. What if they trap Dame? What if they trap CJ and take the ball to him? Mm-hmm. Who's going to be able to score for them on a regular basis? These are the things they're going to have to solve, because they would love to be in this same position next year. Yeah.
All right, let's move on to tonight's Game 4 of the Eastern Conference Finals. Toronto trying to even the series with the Milwaukee Bucks. Kawhi was spectacular in Game 3, scoring 36 points, playing 52 minutes in the double overtime win. CJ, the Raptors even things up tonight?
It's going to be a good game. I think they do have the skill level because of the way they're playing defensively. Now, I think they need a little bit of help because I think Milwaukee is a better team. Do you expect Milwaukee the same Giannis that in game number 3? No. No, you expect Giannis to be able to come back with vision, with vengeance. Yeah, that too. Yeah. But I expect this to be a very good game and wouldn't be surprised at all tomorrow morning if we're talking about, wow, this series is tied up 2-2.
So I would be surprised if we're talking tomorrow morning it's tied up 2-2. I do think Giannis is going to play with great vision and vengeance in this basketball game and respond to what was the worst offensive game he had all season. It wasn't just the 12 points. The 8 turnovers is what really killed him. And so I think Giannis has a 30-plus point night tonight. First game of the series where he scores more than 30 points, and they take a commanding 3-1 series lead.
And let's see how healthy Kawhi is, too, after playing all those minutes.
52 minutes.
Yeah, with that cramp in his right quad.
All right, finally.
You got something, Jenna?
Magic Johnson broke his silence yesterday, telling his side of the story, and what a story it has been. He accused GM Rob Pelinka of backstabbing him. He said Pelinka started whispering to those around the organization that Magic didn't work hard enough. He said he wasn't allowed to fire Luke Walton and that was the straw that broke the camel's back. Said the organization keeps too many cooks in the kitchen when it comes time to make decisions. And when asked about the way in which he walked away, Magic said, quote, "I could have done it a different way, but I did it my way. I'm not a regretful guy." All right, Nick, there's a lot in what Magic had to say yesterday. What was your reaction to all of this?
Okay, I think I want to preface it with this. No matter, let's assume everything Magic said was true. You still don't quit your job that way. You just don't. You just, the way he did it, you don't quit. I worked at a shoe store part-time in high school. I gave them 2 weeks' notice. Like, you don't no show, no call, and you don't quit on the spot of any job, much less president of the Lakers. So I'm not letting him off the hook for that. But the things he said were going on, man, I'd want to quit too. What do I do here? I can't fire the coach. And I can't fire the coach because you say you want to sleep on it. You then come back and say I can. We then have a third meeting. And Tim Harris, who is on the business side of things, people need to understand this about basketball teams or sports teams in general. They have typically very clear lines of demarcation between the people in charge of the players and the coaches, and what actually happens on TV, on the court, on the field, and the people who need to sell suites, the people who need to do marketing deals.
Yeah, just like any other large company.
Right, absolutely. So there wouldn't be someone at Fox who's in charge of selling the commercials who stops by the studio and was like, I actually think in this segment you should do this. Like but the Lakers, according to Magic, muddied the waters. And that went along with when I had heard that Ty Lue had been given the sign-off before the Rambi nixed the whole thing, one of the names I heard, but I thought I must be being someone has it wrong, was that Tim Harris signed off on it. And I said, Tim Harris? Why would Tim Harris have anything to do with it? But now Magic is saying
he was
Tim
in that
Harris
meeting.
Was involved in this. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I would want to know, see, is this. What agreement did Magic and Jeannie actually have about how often Magic was going to be there? And how much he was going to work? Because what Magic said is true, that I told Jeannie, I make too much money being Magic Johnson to stop being Magic Johnson, then I totally understand why he'd be upset if people around the office are talking bad about him doing something that was a prerequisite to him taking the job. Now, if he misled us and Genie expected it to have his full attention for 3 years, then you understand more so why people around the office, most notably Rob Pelinka, would be like, man, Magic's never here. And so that's the part to me I'd love to know what the real story is. But no one seems to be disputing the Luke Walton part. And that, to me, is reason alone for Magic to say, I don't want to be here anymore.
Well, we all knew there was a great deal of dysfunction throughout the Lakers. So now, with what we've heard recently with Jenny Buss, as far as who she using to get information from, and now we've heard from Magic himself, even if he was everything he was saying, I'm just going to go back to my first experience with Magic Johnson. My brother was drafted by the Lakers. I was in the 9th grade. Lakers had just won the world championship. Magic Johnson was a world superstar. My brother goes to training camp. They start the season and everything. Magic ends up getting hurt earlier in the season. My brother ends up playing a lot. And my first conversation about Magic Johnson, my brother was like, he's amazing. He wins every drill. He's first at everything. The attention to detail and the energy he brings to work every day, it drives the franchise. This Magic Johnson that took over as president is a different Magic Johnson. Now, I don't know what relationship agreement him and Jenny Buss came up with from the beginning, but it was clear the amount of power he had and direction as far as time and what he was going to be doing, there were not clear marching orders as far as that. So they started off. Magic thought the job was a lot easier than the job was. The job that requires, it didn't, Magic hadn't even thought about the time he was going to have to put into being that. Magic wants to be a celebrity. It was clear yesterday. That's what he wants to do. And he thought that he signed up to still to be a celebrity. And the Lakers, they didn't need a celebrity. They need someone to run their basketball operations. And if he was trying to be a celebrity, he should have told LeBron James that when LeBron James decided, I'm getting ready to partner with the Lakers. I mean, the Lakers, man, there is so much dysfunction. Magic talking about, yeah, I talked to Jenny Buss a couple days ago. Rob Pelinka, at his press conference introducing the coach, said, yeah, I talked to Magic two days ago. Man, if someone's backstabbing me, I'm not getting ready to have dinner with them. I'm not getting ready to have all these types of conversations. So I understand why the Lakers struggled. I'm not surprised that Magic Johnson got into this a little naive as far as what the requirements were and what he was willing to do, because Magic has a great life. He should have never campaigned for this job. Magic was sitting on the sideline. The Lakers were struggling. And Jenny Buss and him are friends. And Magic's going back and forth. Oh, man, we should do this. We should do this. And he got the opportunity and he realized it's not as easy as he thought it was going to be. So I'm not surprised. A lot of what Magic said is true. A lot of the rumors, I had someone in L.A. told me he was trying to fire Luke Walton.
Yeah, you've been
from
this,
the beginning. Yep. That's what he was trying to do. And that's a major conflict because Jenny Buss, Magic didn't have the power. Total power over the basketball operations, and you could hear that in yesterday's conversation.
All right, you mentioned Jeannie Buss. Nick, it's being reported that Buss was blindsided by all of the comments that Magic Johnson made. What do you make of that?
If that's true, and Ramona Shelburne's reporting it, and she seems very well-sourced on this, it seems like she has a real reporter-source relationship with Jeannie, that then Jeannie Buss is unequipped for this job. If you could be blindsided by Magic Johnson, first of all, let's think about the show he decided. He went on First Take. He didn't go on to sit down with Rachel Nichols. He went on a show where you know he wants as big of an audience and as inflammatory as possible. That's first of all. Second of all, when he walked away, he said, I'm tired of the backstabbing and whispering. We deduced he was talking about Rob Pelinka. There were two people he could be talking about, Jeannie or Rob. He kept saying, I love Jeannie.
Right.
I don't have too much of a relation with Rob. He used the word backstabbing in his previous press avail. So how could you be blindsided? And Jeannie knew I stopped him from firing the coach, which is one of the biggest jobs a president of basketball operations would have. I all of a sudden made him consult with Linda Rambis and Tim Harris. So either she's misleading the public by saying or releasing or leaking she was blindsided, or she is in so far over her head. Because how could she be blindsided by something? I don't think there was too much that shocking about Magic's interview yesterday.
No.
I was a little surprised he went into as much detail as he did, and he really laid to bear his lack of relationship with Pelinka.
Yeah, that I was surprised about, too. I thought his appearance yesterday was going to be like his tweets. Very just obvious on the surface.
Okay, sure.
Wow, that's a good basketball right. game. Right. Man, that shot went in from 25 feet.
Right. But I don't know how Jeannie, who has as much insight on what actually was going on as anybody, could be blindsided by this. And it is your job as the owner of the Lakers to not be blindsided by much of anything. It's
no,
your job.
Not the way it's run.
Right.
No, not when she, all and her friends are running the team. She knew all about the basketball, as far as the business operations. I guarantee you, she can tell you every dollar made, every jersey sold, all those things. But the basketball operations part, like the Lakers are a mess. And we just got a full reveal through yesterday with Magic and the things that he said.
And just real quick, you repeatedly bring up, when we talk about Jeannie Buss, how successful the business side has been.
Yes.
And I think it's informative to one of the reasons why, and I think it's foolish, but why she might be bringing Tim Harris in, why all of a sudden Linda Rambis might be having a say in basketball matters. Because she's looking at it, she's like, well, half the business is going great. So maybe the smart people are over there. Tim Harris makes us a ton of money. Linda Rambis give me good marketing advice, good advice in this. Let's see their advice on basketball. But that's those two things typically have to stay separate.
Yes.
And being as skillful on the business side doesn't mean you can figure out which coach can help you scheme against the Warriors in 2019.
Look, if you take all that other stuff out of it, all the noise, the distraction, the drama, how the team's going to play this coming season is the most important thing. And right now, the first thing that Vogel's going to have to do, and now it's going to be Rob Pelinka, is going to go out and get someone to help this team win, which is the only thing that could even come close to fixing or quieting some of this noise. And every time we unveil, like, a new layer to all this, we say, well, how is this going to affect someone coming in? And we haven't heard anything from LeBron James. He's been very quiet on all of this. Cece, how do you think these latest comments from Magic now affects the pursuit of getting a free agent into that organization?
Well, everything is out there. It didn't help. Like, what Magic said yesterday, it did not help the Lakers with Kawhi Leonard. Kyrie Irving, we don't know. So these are the people we're talking about. Now, let's just say this. The upset of the offseason would be like if Klay Thompson left Golden State to go to the Lakers. Why would Klay leave what they got going on? See, that's why what they're doing is so devastating, because even to pull off something like that, you don't even have things in place that a player would trust you. Magic yesterday talked about, oh, I'm going to talk to free agents. Well, if Jeannie Buss was shocked by what he said, why would you let him talk to anyone else? Rob Pelinka, you can't trust him. Like, he's over the basketball operations. Like, you can't let Magic. Matter of fact, you got to put Magic on a gag order. Don't talk about the Lakers anymore.
Have his five-week Europe trip go a little early.
I do believe that it will hurt them in free agency. Everything that's going on didn't help. But LeBron James has been constant. He was not behind the scenes trying to pull the strings to be able to control this situation. LeBron let it play out. And I'm going to tell you something. I like Frank Vogel as a coach. I don't think he's a bad coach. And if they had done a regular search and Magic and Rob had come up with Frank Vogel as their coach, I'd have been like, okay, they could have done worse. I would have been okay with his basketball. Yeah. It's how they got there. LeBron did the right thing. I'm going to show up at the press conference. I'm going to see how we can get better. I'm going to tell you about our personnel, and I'm going to give this guy a fresh start, because the battles they went through with the Pacers and the Heat, LeBron respects his basketball, because he did some things to LeBron defensively that gave LeBron
some problems.
So if we had gotten there a different route, yesterday's press conference would have been totally different. But I like LeBron behind the scenes. I'm going to support that guy. I'm here. I realize what we're doing, and I'm going to win. In spite of everything else, I believe that's his mentality.
When it comes to the free agents, and that's what this whole offseason is going to come down to now, I'm old enough to remember when the narrative was, is LeBron James hurting the Lakers' ability to get a second star? We're now at a place where LeBron James is the only thing the Lakers have going for. The only reason the Lakers are going to be in the room for a second star is because of the pull of LeBron James, and that responsibility now falls on his shoulders. But I know, much like when college recruiting, there is negative recruiting. And when you're a star free agent and you're meeting with the Dallas Mavericks and you walk into a room and there's Mark Cuban there, there's Donnie Nelson there, there's Rick Carlisle there, and they know your next meeting's with the Lakers, not only are you impressed by who's in that room, what do you think they're saying about, do you want to trust this organization? When you go to L.A. and you have two meetings set up And the first one is Steve Ballmer, Jerry West, Doc Rivers. And the next one is Jeannie Buss, Lyndon Kurt Rambis, Rob Pelinka, and Frank Vogel. LeBron better be tipping the scales heavily in favor of the Lakers, because the other teams are going to be telling them that organization is a mess.
Right.
And they're going to be much more, I would imagine, impressed by the firepower in those rooms for the Mavericks or for the Clippers or for almost whomever else than who the Lakers can now present.
And we know some of the guys out there. A guy like Kawhi, he doesn't want any part of a mess like this. So this stuff has to get cleaned up. All right, take a break. Coming up, are the Warriors one of the greatest dynasties in NBA history after advancing to their fifth straight finals? That's ahead on First Things First. Back here, First Things First, Yahoo Sports senior NBA writer Vincent Goodwill joins us. Hey, Vinny.
Good morning.
How's it going?
Going well. How about you guys?
We're good.
Nice
We're good.
Jacket there.
It looks almost similar. I saw yesterday's, and I was like, this looks kind of like what CC wore, except his is nicer than mine.
WWCW. What would C wear?
Oh, good job, Jenna.
Try to contribute.
I didn't know what it meant.
Golden State Warriors. Warriors trying to finish off the Blazers in game four.
Get them on the gram, man. Start giving them out to all my little fans.
Warriors trailing by as many as 17 in this one. Come all the way back. Go up one with less than a minute to go. Draymond from long extends the lead to four. Clock winding down. Portland down two. Dame Lillard's three is short. And that's the game. And that's the series. Warriors win 119-117. The Golden State Warriors headed to the NBA Finals for the fifth straight year. Here's Steph Curry after the game.
We don't take anything for granted. Every single night, especially when you get to the playoffs, there's a hunger about us. And whether we win or lose, you know, we take pride in how we play. And five straight finals and the historic nature of what that is kind of crazy to think about. We want to enjoy it. We know four more wins defines your season, winning a championship, so got to stay locked in.
And you believe that. They'll enjoy it just until they get ready to play again. How incredible has this run been, Vinny, for them?
You know what? It's hard to quantify when you're in the moment, even from a historical standpoint. Like, you have to kind of wait a couple of eras before you fully appreciate it. Like, for me, I'm a music lover. So I think of the Warriors as like Stevie Wonder in the 70s or Prince in the 80s, where when it's happening, they're dropping album after album. You're not really figuring out, oh, my God, this is classic. You know, this is historic, and I think this is how we're going to view the Warriors in 10 or 15 years from now. We're not going to think about, oh, well, KD came from free agency from OKC, where they had a 7-game series, and we were deprived of a rivalry. We're going to look at some beautiful basketball that changed the way that this game has been played for generations to come in a short period of time. Like, the way that the game was played in 2014 compared to the way the game is being played now, it's almost like aliens came down here and said, shoot more threes, switch on defense, and basically take all the positions away. And I don't think that there's been any greater change of shift in any point in such a short period of time in NBA history where the game looks so completely different and aesthetically better or worse depending on your sensibilities. And I think that's where the Warriors' greatest legacy is going to be once we're able to remove all the feelings and everything else from it, just how beautiful they've made the game look, how easy and how dedicated they've been throughout these playoff runs.
Five straight NBA finals, man. Like, as of a decade ago, the watermark was essentially three. There's Russell's Celtics went to 10 straight. It's an 8-team league. It's different. Russell's also the greatest winner in sports history. But post-Russell Celtics, how did you get to more than three straight? Well, you had Kareem, and not quite his apex prime, but still MVP caliber Kareem, and prime Magic Johnson. Two top five guys on the same team at the same time. That's how the Lakers did it. Or you had Larry Bird when he won three consecutive league MVPs to go along with Kevin McHale coming off your bench and then Bill Walton coming off your bench along with a great eight-man roster. That's how you did it. No one else had done it as of a decade ago. We forget because what LeBron did with Miami and then Cleveland. But your Detroit Pistons, they went to three straight NBA finals. The team, when I say your, the team you grew up watching, they went to three straight NBA finals. The year they're going for their fourth straight, swept in the conference finals. Shaq and Kobe's Lakers, they went to three straight NBA finals. The year they're going for four straight, they lose in the second round. Jordan's Bulls, they go to three straight finals. He then quits, goes to play another sport, goes three straight finals again. He quits again. Like, going to more than three straight was considered nearly impossible. They've now been to five straight. And there is no precedent for it in the modern NBA. Even LeBron's eight straight, it's on two different teams. Mm-hmm. So he got, after four, he got a fresh set of legs from Kyrie. Mm-hmm. Fresh Kevin Love. You got a new coach, new everything. And so we're numb to it to a degree because we saw it coming. And especially once they got through the Rockets, it felt like, okay, even without Kevin Durant, they're going to be fine against Portland. But we should take a moment to recognize this is the type of thing it's entirely possible we never see again. Mm-hmm. You can be a 45-year-old NBA fan. You've never seen it. And so who's to say anyone watching right now will see it again anytime in the next 45 years? So I think it's incredibly impressive. And Steph, Draymond, and Klay, what they have built there along with Steve Kerr, it's all-time great stuff.
I think that it's one of the greatest things we've ever seen, but I think it also will be one of the least appreciated. And the reason why, and we feel good about it now, and the reason why we feel good about it now is because Kevin Durant wasn't out there last night. If Kevin Durant was out there last night, they blow out Portland, they blow him out in two of the four games at least, and then we're talking about, well, they had to go out and get KD.
The game assist.
Because you can't tell this story with Golden State, and it has been great 5 years. But all that, all the things that we loved and everything, in the end, we kind of didn't like it as much because it was very, very different. And maybe they had a little tricky pull by going out and getting KD.
But my question is, as an organization, isn't it your job to field the best possible team? I didn't bag on the New England Patriots when they went and got the ultimate cheat code and Randy Moss and went 18-0. I didn't. I appreciated the fact that they said, we're not good enough.
Yeah,
let's go out and get the best player we can.
Because it never got that far because they never won. And if they had gone undefeated and dominated for a couple of years, you would have been like, oh, okay, we need to look at this. But they didn't win.
And they hadn't won the previous 2 years. The Patriots mm-hmm. had gotten knocked out in 05 and 06. They didn't think they
had
enough
firepower.
And if Moss
had had something to do with that.
Right.
They resurrected his career.
Listen, we don't have to relitigate KD going there. But what we can't do is compare it to other things in sports history because it's unprecedented.
No. What I'm saying is, as an organization, it's your job, whether it's through the Steph contract or the cap spike and everything else, all these, you know, sort of circumstances that just sort of happened to create itself at the right proper time.
When we were passing out all the accolades and everything, I went to the organization first. And Steve Kerr. I ain't even get to the basketball because I believe that was special. What they have done, how they've cultivated that environment, gotten that institution built, get all the money to build, buy the new building, the new stadium. Steve Kerr with his health risk, like he wasn't proven as a head coach. That system, those backup players coming in and being competent, knowing their offense, knowing how they were going to play defense. That was culture last night that won that game with all those backup players.
Here's my other question. I'm sorry, Jenna, just real quick. Because we're talking about five straight finals, not around the number of championships. Had they not gotten KD,
they don't win again.
Wait a second. Do you think they don't make the NBA finals a third straight time, the first year without KD, when they swept everybody? They swept the whole playoffs leading up to game four against Cleveland. You think they, so if they make it that year, they showed us this year they can beat the Rockets without Kevin Durant. Maybe they don't have the number of rings. Maybe Cleveland picks them off the first year. I don't know if Cleveland could have picked them off last year. But I think even without Durant, we're talking about their fifth straight finals appearance.
But you're trying to pretend as if Kevin Durant doesn't exist. Just because he's not on your team doesn't mean he's not in the league. If he doesn't go to Golden State, he either stays in Oklahoma City
to Boston, where they still could have made five straight finals.
Or he maybe have went to Houston to play with his buddy James Harden. Then what happens?
Okay, but Houston wasn't recruiting Kevin Durant. I mean, that's not a
No. I'm just saying. I believe that Kevin Durant knew he was going to Golden State that February, before July ever came mm-hmm. up. So let's say Golden State doesn't exist and they're not recruiting him actively mm-hmm. from the previous season. And everybody knew that they were recruiting him. It was just a little more quiet than it was this time around. He stays West. He's still the best player in the basketball, or one and two with mm-hmm. LeBron. That means you still have to go through that guy. And if he's on a team with better coaching and a more, you know, better constructed roster and hierarchy, he may put Golden State out. Like, you can't pretend as if he doesn't exist just because he's not on Golden State.
Regardless, this is a team that went through everything they went through in the regular season, where there were a lot of ups and downs, that lost Boogie Cousins at the start of the postseason. They had no Iggy last night. They had no Kevin Durant in this conference finals. And now they're headed to the NBA finals. So we'll talk much more about this coming up. Vince, stick around. Coming up, though, who is to blame for the Lakers' dysfunction? Magic Johnson has an idea. That is next on First Things First.
It's like...
Back here, First Things First, with Vincent Goodwell, and we're going viral. Steph and Seth Curry became the first brothers to face off in the conference finals, and last night after the game, they swapped jerseys, appropriately enough. Pretty cool moment.
I'm happy for Seth. A lot of people thought he was a fringe NBA player, and he was one of their best guys off the bench in a conference finals. Like, I understand they got swept, but Seth had the moment in, I think it was game two, where he stole it from Steph three times. He had a nice game. He has proven himself not just to be Steph's little brother, but a legitimate rotation player on a good team.
Look, go back to that swapping the jerseys. Like, I have a younger brother. Today is actually his birthday. If I beat you or you beat me, we not swapping jerseys. Like, you go that way. We'll talk later. Like, I want to crush you.
But one guy's been beating the other one, I would imagine, the whole career.
And I'm a middle child. I'm trying to win every time. I don't care who it is.
I mean...
Child, please. This moment right here, man, there are NBA royalty. The Curry family, like this right here. And Steph's moving on to the finals. Seth, man, he should be glad to resurrect his career. Man, he was playing in the G League.
He's going to get paid this summer. Make no mistake. He's going to get paid this summer.
And he gave Steph some problems defensively.
Well, who knows your game better than your brother?
Well...
Man, good point.
Well said, little brother.
Could Butch defend you?
I mean, come on, man. I'm on a whole nother level.
Now, back to... We
from the same tree, but he on a different side.
Back to Magic Johnson now, who broke a silence yesterday telling his side of the story, why he stepped down. What a story it was, too. So Magic accused GM Rob Pelinka of backstabbing him. Said Pelinka started whispering to those around the organization that Magic didn't work hard enough. Said Pelinka was gunning for his job. Said he wasn't allowed to fire Luke Walton and called that the straw that broke the camel's back. He said the organization keeps too many cooks in the kitchen when it comes time to making decisions. And when asked about the way he walked away, Magic said, quote, I could have done it in a different way, but I did it my way, and I'm not a regretful guy. All right, Vinny, you heard this same way we did. What was your reaction to all of it?
Well, there's a reaction on a number of different levels here, right? There's the Magic being the imperfect messenger. You know, because he wasn't the perfect president of basketball operations. He felt like he should have been more of an overseer, not necessarily someone who's in the trenches every day, setting the course, setting the culture, and making sure that culture is being enforced. He felt like he almost treated it like some of his Fortune 500 businesses, where I don't have to be here every day. I can set the course.
Even though his job is... president of
how many other things
operations.
Is he president of?
Right.
Like,
he's got
the Dodgers,
hundreds of theaters. He's not setting ticket prices. He's not talking concessions. He's there for the ribbon cutting, and he's there for. I'm not saying you're wrong, Jen.
You're saying he assumed that this goes falls along with everything else he served.
There's just more of an emotional attachment because of the Lakers.
Nice. Yeah. The best role for Magic Johnson, the one that he thrives in, is where he is paid a certain fee, a lot of money. To come in
and be Magic,
rev the people up, give them some hocus pocus, and get on out of there and go do his superstar lifestyle. Magic would have been better off served if they had hired him as a senior consultant. That's the type of role that Magic Johnson would have performed well in, not to be able to cut you off and everything.
You're absolutely right. And secondly, just because he threw the bombs and it seemed kind of out of place didn't mean that some those things didn't have merit.
Right.
Like, if you're talking about Tim Harris being involved, which I had heard of, the day that Magic Johnson resigned, people said, the name that you should be looking out for is Tim Harris. What we've looked at and what we've seen is that the Lakers are this mom-and-pop organization that has developed and turned into the premier organization in the NBA, and they're still trying to run it like the stop on the corner, and they can't do that. And Jeannie Buss, because she was not her brothers, we gave her a lot of country, and assuming that Jeannie knows best, because Jeannie was not Jim Buss and Mitch Kupchak and how all of that stuff was ran. We assumed that she was naturally better. What we've come to find out is she is just as confused and she is just as influenced as anybody else in this. And I've said, I wrote this for Yahoo Sports a couple weeks ago, the Lakers should sell. Because they clearly do not know how to set the course and run a franchise in the modern NBA. Second generation NBA ownership has turned out to be largely disastrous around the league. Where you had the Lakers, you got the Knicks, you had the Bulls who are kind of in that transition period right
Great
now.
Great point.
And
yes.
None of them are really thriving in this new NBA. It's a little more corporate. It's big box NBA business now. And it's no longer just this family-oriented situation anymore. And you got to apply big box principles to big box situations.
And as much flack as Jim Dolan and the Knicks get justifiably, one thing that he has done, now sometimes he's put the wrong people in place.
Right.
But he hires basketball people. He's like, hey, man, I want to go play my music and Jimmy in the straight
shot.
Lets,
he lets them do their
I'm
job.
Out. Yep. I'm out. I'm going to kick people out the arena. I'm going to play my guitar, and I'm going to see y'all later.
Mm-hmm.
But the Lakers, to have the way it's being run, according now to all reports, is you've got this, to use almost Game of Thrones reference, a small council of people that don't necessarily know anything about basketball, might know a ton about selling suites. And you might know a ton about marketing. And you, once upon a time, you played for the Lakers, but you don't know, when I say know a ton about basketball, the modern NBA. Like, you're talking about, man, it's about switching. It's about positionless. It's about three-point shooting. You have all these people together, and you are trying to go hive mind when what you need is a decision maker. And Magic maybe signed up for a job he didn't want to do. Because I thought one of the telling moments from the press conference yesterday was, he was like, man, he's like, I gave up date night with my wife. Man, a lot of us gave up date night with our wife to take big-time jobs. Chris don't want to hear about these kids. So I mean, I just think because...
This is my thing, man. Because, I mean, I've been nice, man, through the years with Magic when they named him president. But I'm telling you, the night they named him president, Nick and I were in Los Angeles. I tell you, man, this is a disaster. Like, he is not capable of doing this job. Like, people think Magic Johnson is something else, man. He is not the president of your basketball organization. You could hear that yesterday in the conversation. How are you going to walk off the job with someone who's been a lifelong friend? Her dad made you a multi-millionaire. Jenny Buss's dad, Dr. Buss, walked Magic Johnson into every billionaire that was in Los Angeles, every season ticket holder. Magic Johnson has been able to make money because of her dad. Magic was supposed to come to the rescue and be able to help Jenny and those knucklehead brothers out. Magic was not capable of doing it because Magic did not get the job requirements in taking this title. Oh, he wanted to be the big man on campus. Well, that requires coming to work. And Magic Johnson is not looking for no 9-to-5 job.
With all that said, and this circles back to your point, he can be the imperfect messenger. But none of that justifies Tim Harris coming and saying you can't fire Luke Walton. Man, who the hell are you? That is not your role.
I'm going to tell you something, Nick. If you're not there every day to be able to analyze everything and realize that the people there that are making decisions every single day, and then it's time for you to make your decision, you missed out on stuff because look at all this stuff going on. Yeah, Magic, that's what happens.
Here's what happens. Magic's absence allows for allegiances to form without his knowledge.
And
the power dynamic. That allowed Rob Pelinka and Tim Harris to get close. That allowed them to become more influential with Jeannie Buss when he's not there every day. And he didn't expect that. Now, when you hire Magic Johnson, you just said it. Magic Johnson has shown that he's not here for the hard stuff. When he coached the Lakers and they were 5-11, Magic quit. When Magic hit the Magic Hour and that wasn't working, Magic quit. So if you're expecting Magic to do anything else besides be Magic and show up with a $1 million smile and say some nice things, that's your fault.
Okay, Magic is gone. Nick, are the Lakers any better off now that Rob Pelinka is going to be running everything than they were a couple months ago when Magic was helping out?
That's the $1 million question, and that's where it circles back to ownership and the lack of real leadership. The day after Magic quit, once we were done laughing about, I ain't gonna be here anymore, what we said was, This could be a great opportunity for the Lakers. This is, no matter what anybody says, no matter how much disarray the franchise
Nick, that was stupid, man. We were thinking regular stuff. We were trying to think just regular stuff.
The way a team
stuff.
Would
yeah,
be
just
run.
A normal business.
Because this is a great job.
Because you mean because they could have brought someone in who
yeah.
actually
knew how to
do it. There's
no salary cap on team
You're
president.
You're an idiot. I'm an idiot for thinking that.
Right. There's no salary cap on team president. People love living in L.A. Yes. LeBron plays there. They can sign another max free agent.
We had names we were talking
about.
You
don't think Sam Presti was waiting on a phone call? You don't think Sam Presti's like, man, I've done everything I could do. I drafted Kevin Durant, Russ Westbrook, James Harden in 3 consecutive years. We instantly made an NBA Finals, and now look at us. Like, you don't think he wants to move from Stillwater, wherever the hell he lives in Oklahoma City, to L.A. with respect to Oklahoma City? I'm from the Midwest myself, but come on, it's Los Angeles. And it's the Lakers. They had an opportunity. But Jeannie Buss decided to take that opportunity and give more power to Kobe's agent and the Rambot. And now it all falls on LeBron. So good luck to him.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.